listening to a podcast presentation of Hillside Four Square Church in Reno, Nevada.
So I got to tell you, in our Wandering Well series, I did not intend for it to go the way that it's going. The best laid plans of Louis have gone awry, and it's okay because I like the rabbit trail that we're heading down. But like my wife said last week, you just talked different than you normally do. And I said, well, I was telling a story. I says, well, okay, are you going to keep doing that? It's like, maybe, because I can ask her, how'd I do? And when I get the look, it's like, you did so good. It's like, oh, okay. So, yeah, I did. Yeah. Anyway, so if I'm talking different, I've gotten kind of stuck in the patriarchs and the matriarchs. These are the ones who would be in the book of Genesis where we hear about the origin of our faith. And I had intended to be talking about the wanderings of Israel and Jesus' wanderings in the desert with his disciples, you know, maybe John the Baptist in there, King David. And I just kind of got stuck on Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and now son Joseph. And I'm trusting that God's going to be addressing and using the words that are spoken today in a way that encourages you. But I got to tell you, sometimes we have to wander and it's not our choice. We're wandering because we have been forced to do it. And we're out in the middle of a very uncomfortable, terrible situation, and we can know that in the middle of this, God can work something for good. And so I'm going to jump right in to talking about wandering with Joseph. It was not his own choice. Joseph had something occur in his life that was meant for evil, but God worked it out for good. And one of the things I want us to remember and to hear is it comes from God fulfilling Abraham's blessing. And he's going to make Abraham great. He's going to make him famous. Anybody who blesses Abraham is going to receive blessing. Anybody who curses is going to be cursed. But then also, all the nations of the world are going to be blessed through him and through his descendants. Joseph's story is one that is evidence of that. It's also evidence of one of the bumper sticker Christian verses from the book of Romans, where it says, God works all things together for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. Anybody ever heard that verse before? So this is where, for people who love him, he can take even things that are meant to destroy us and he can turn it for good. Because we live in a world where bad stuff happens. And if we're expecting that, you know, God's going to continually jump into our life and protect, keep us from ever experiencing anything, it's not going to happen. Because the dominion or the oversight of this world has been handed over to our enemy. So that's why bad stuff happens. But God intentionally says, when you're walking through the valley of the shadow of death, don't be afraid because I am with you. And when we're going through difficult times, we can know God's going to turn this for good. That's why when we're going through trials, we're going through persecutions, we're going through suffering, we can know we're supposed to consider it joy because it builds character in us, because we get to see what God's done in our life before. And it gives us faith to move forward. I can tell you, I prayed for people to be healed before, and I've seen people be healed. But when God takes away the pain in my shoulder, it's a present every single day reminder. I'm going to tell as many people about it as I can. Because I got to tell you, after 30 years, I'm looking for the pain in the shoulder, and it's not there. And the temptation would be to kind of baby the thing, walk around like I did when it was hurt. But to say, I've got to learn a new way of living and walking and carrying myself, and to think that newness of no pain is there, but then now how will I live? And what words will come out of my mouth? Anyway, we're going to look at Genesis 37, verses 2 through 4. So Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his sons, because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a robe of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. Last week, we got into a little bit of Joseph's story. But really, Jacob got tricked by his father-in-law into marrying not only his sweetheart, Rachel, but also her big sister. And then at some point, both of the girls decided Jacob needed to have two more wives so they could have more kids. And so of all of this, they start cranking out kids, everybody except for Rachel. And at some point, Rachel finally gets pregnant and has a kid. And this is after all the other brothers really are born. And so Joseph is the golden child. And the favorite son of his favorite wife is then thrust into a situation where dad sends him to check on the brothers to make sure they're doing well at their jobs. Okay, so he comes back from watching his brothers in the fields, and he says, by the way, Simeon and Reuben, they were doing stuff. They weren't where they're supposed to be. You know, Dan and Gad and Asher, all those guys, Issachar, they were doing stuff, and they shouldn't have been doing it, which made the brothers love him so much more because he ratted them out. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, Jacob loved, or Israel, we'll call him, that's what God called him. Israel loved Joseph more than anyone else in the family. And so he treated him so much better than all the other boys. And he spoiled him rotten. Now, have any of you ever been raised in a family where you think you know who the favorite is? And it's not you, it's someone else. Yes, anybody besides me, you know this? Yeah, I used to think it's like my brother Ben, the youngest, is the favorite. There's 12 years difference between the two of us, and my parents practiced raising a child with me as the firstborn, and then by the time they got to him, they really knew what they were doing. I figured out, you know, actually, they were just tired. They were just tired. And it's like, it's all good. He'll survive. Yeah. But in this particular situation, there was no doubt that Joseph was the favorite. Because dad treated him different, gave him special stuff. It says it gave him a coat of many colors. The Hebrew word for this is a coat with long sleeves. And we think, so he got a flashy coat and it's really good looking. Actually, what this means is he's being given the firstborn blessing for the family. He's the youngest. But Jacob, Israel, is saying, you know what? You're the first son of my favorite wife, so I'm going to make you the one who inherits everything. And all the other brothers were like, what are we, chopped liver? And it says, they hated him. And they could not speak peacefully to him. There's nothing good. And we can think, well, this is a little sibling rivalry. No, think, this is more of the continuation of the dysfunction that had gone on with Esau and Jacob. You know, they didn't get along with each other. And Esau says, when dad dies, I'm going to kill you. And he meant, I'm going to, K-I-L-L, you, dead. And so Jacob runs away. We see the same type of a thing surfacing with Joseph's life. It doesn't help that in the middle of this, Joseph starts having dreams. And being a 17-year-old, you know, sometimes they say things that they should keep to themselves. Not everything that God reveals to you needs to be told to everyone else. Okay? So Joseph says, guys, you're never going to believe this. I had this dream. And we were out in the field and we're binding up sheaves of grain. And all of a sudden, my sheaf stood up. And all of your sheaves came around. And they bowed down to mine. Isn't that funny? And it says, and they hated him more. And so Joseph's like, guys, I had another dream. Mom and dad, you want to hear this too, okay? I was there. And then there's the sun and the moon and 11 stars. Sun, mom, dad, 11 stars, 11 brothers. And all the stars and the sun and moon bowed down to me. Isn't this incredible? And Israel, his dad, pulls him aside and says, you got to learn to shut up, man. Don't. You think we're going to bow down to you? And it was my dream. I just wanted to share my dream. And the brother's like, whatever. So one of the things that we see happen is the brothers want to find a way to make this little Joseph problem go away. So they have been traveling from Beersheba to Shechem and like, shepherds, they're nomads, they have to take their flocks different places where they can be exposed to good pasture land. And dad says, I want them to know that the boys are doing good. And by boys, we're talking guys in their 30s and 40s, at least by this time. And so he said, Joseph, I'm going to send you out to check on your brothers again. And he starts to walk out, and at some point, dad probably said, take your favorite coat. Joseph's walking. And it says, from a long way off, the brothers could see him coming. Said, oh, great, here comes the dreamer. Let's kill him. Like, yeah, let's kill him. This will be great. We could just say we found, you know, parts of him and then take the coat back. Our Joseph problem solved. And the oldest, being the firstborn, says, I really am down with this plan. But you know what? I feel a little bit guilty because, you know, I feel responsible for him. So let's not kill him. Let's just throw him in a well. Big hole. Okay? And so Joseph comes and they grab him and they throw him into the well. It was dry. And they leave him in there. And Reuben disappears for a while, probably going off to take care of some business. And the other brothers are like, man, we should have killed him when we had the chance. Maybe we could at least make some money off of him. And it says there was a group of Ishmaelites, a group of nomads that was traveling in a caravan from one place to another. And they said, let's see if they might need a slave boy. And so they pull Joseph up. They say, what do you give us for this, you know, mostly good, you know, strong, strapping boy? And so they get him 20 pieces of silver. And Joseph is taken. And ends up in Egypt. And Reuben comes back and he says, okay, what are we going to do with Joseph? He says, actually, here's your share. So what do you mean? Somebody paid money for that kid. Can you believe that? Here's your... Like, Reuben's like, what are we going to tell dad? It's like, well... So they killed a goat and they spilled blood all over Joseph's coat and they took it back to their dad and they said, dad, we've found this coat. I don't know. you could examine it and see whose it is. And he looked at it. Israel says, it's my son's. And he says, you know, my life is basically over. Joseph had a little brother named Benjamin, and all of the affection that had been turned towards Joseph falls on Benjamin. Let's look at Genesis 39, 2 through 5. Joseph is sold into slavery. He is a part of a family that is considered to be the chief of the royal guard, a guy named Potiphar. And in the middle of his slavery, God still worked through and was able to bless him. He said this, the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had. So God's blessing Joseph in the middle of slavery. He's causing he's causing the work of his hands to prosper. And it's happening because of who, not only who he is, but because that God has a plan to bless all of the world through Abraham's blessing. Let's look at one more verse. From the time that he made his overseer in his house, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and in field. And so at some point, Potiphar doesn't have to worry about his household anymore. Wouldn't it be neat to have that person come into your life and their sole job is to make everything you do awesome? And then you can just take care of the stuff you want to take care of. This is what's going on with Potiphar. Now, at this particular point, it says Joseph was a fine-looking man. Okay, he's about 17, 18 years old, and Potiphar has a wife. We never find out what her name is, but it's probably something like Delilah or Jezebel or something. It's something a little bit, because when we see what she's doing, she sets her eyes upon Joseph and very brazenly approaches him one day and says, I want you to take me to bed now. And Joseph's like, oh, excuse me, ma'am, you're my master's wife, and throughout the entire house, he's given me free rein with anything I want except for you, and I'm not going there. I'm not going to sin against God, and I'm not going to commit this wickedness. You'd think at this particular point, she's going to say, okay, fine. Nope. She thinks he's playing hard to get. So over and over and over, she throws herself at him, trying to get him to fall. And I got to tell you, as an 18-year-old guy, a woman who is throwing herself at you saying, I just want you to take me to bed, there has to be something going on in Joseph's head where it's like, dude, I don't know if I can keep, I don't know if I could, I want to be strong. I make that decision. I'm not going to do this. We can't take away the thought that Joseph had to at least be confronted with the temptation. Who's going to find out if I do this? And he says, nope, that'd be sinning against God, and I'm not going to commit this wickedness. There comes a time, you know, if you know something like this is going on, you're going to make sure you're never alone in the same place with this person. Okay? However, the woman of the house catches Joseph by himself, and she comes over to him, and she forces herself on him and says, now we're going to bed. And he says, well, you know what? I'm the youngest son, or second youngest son, of 12 brothers. And one thing I've learned how to do is a little brother dance. And this little brother dance, I can get away from anybody who's trying to grab a hold of me. I can get moved like this. I can go this way. There's no way you can hold me. And he slips out of her hands. She's holding onto his coat, and he takes off. Later, Potiphar comes home, and his wife comes up and says, the Hebrew you brought into our house, he tried to attack me. He tried to take advantage of me. I don't know if Potiphar believed him, because if that was really the case as the captain of the guard, I think Joseph probably would have had something more happen to him than being thrown in jail. It's my conjecture. But it says Potiphar was enraged, and he threw him into prison. Joseph goes, as if his life trajectory could get worse. He goes from, my family's going to bow down to me, to now I'm a slave in the house. Now I'm wrongfully accused of attempted rape. Now I'm in prison. I'm a slave in prison. Let's look at Genesis 39. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge. Let's go to the next one. Yeah. Everywhere Joseph goes, God's hand is on him. We can think things are working out good for Joseph, except for what? He's in charge in prison. Okay? We can think, I don't want to go to prison right now with the conditions we have in the U.S. This is an ancient Egyptian prison, a hole. They want to make your life there a living hell. And yet in the middle of it, God shows Joseph great favor. And even the keeper of the prison says, you know what? Things run better when Joe's in charge. And it says God blessed him, and all he did, he showed steadfast love to him. Not where he thought he'd be, but God's working in him. So then there's more dreams. One day, these two guys, very noble-looking individuals, they were people who actually worked with the Pharaoh. The chief cupbearer and the chief baker are sitting there, man, we just had these dreams, and they really mess with my head. I don't understand what they mean. And Joseph said, yeah, I occasionally dream. You know, give it a shot. Let's see. Maybe God will tell me what they mean. And the cupbearer says, well, I was holding a cup, and there was these three vines that were in front of me, and then there was they budded, and they turned into grapes. So I grabbed the grapes, and I squeezed them into a cup, and I realized this is Pharaoh's cup, and I gave it to Pharaoh. What do you think that means? And Joseph said, man, this is awesome. The three vines are 3 days, and this is a sign that in 3 days, Pharaoh's going to forgive you. He's going to restore you and put you back in your position as the chief cupbearer. This is awesome. And by the way, will you remember me when when you're in the place of position? I don't deserve to be in this hole. And the reason, I was sold into slavery, and then I was wrongfully accused of stuff, but can you please remember me? And the guy's like, dude, I got your back. If I'm out, you know, you're out. And the chief baker is stoked because he's just heard some awesome news. He says, okay, tell me what mine means. It's like, I baked some cakes, and I put them in baskets. There's three baskets on my head. And the birds kept coming and eating the bread. When do I get out? And he says, yeah, you're going to get out, and Pharaoh's going to hang you and kill you dead, and the birds are going to eat your flesh. Sorry. 3 days later, the chief cupbearer is restored to his position, and the chief baker is put on a gallows and hanged, and the birds eat him, just like Joseph said. And like often will happen, the chief cupbearer puts in Pharaoh's court, and of course he follows through on his promise, right? Oh. He's back. He's not in prison anymore. He doesn't have worries. So he just gets to go about his regular duties. And so at this particular point, a couple years go by, Pharaoh has a birthday. And when Pharaoh has a birthday, Pharaoh throws a birthday party. But he comes to the party and he's really kind of grumpy because he had two weird dreams. And he doesn't understand what they mean. So he called everybody who was smart, everybody who they call the magicians and the astrologers. And he tells them the dreams and they're like, I got nothing. And he's bemoaning the fact as he's, you know, sitting down with the cup that is cup of wine that his cupbearer brought him. He says, I just wish there was someone who could interpret dreams. And the chief cupbearer's like, oh, that one dude. I'm totally sorry for this. I messed up. I should have said this earlier, but when it comes down to it, when I was in prison, I know a guy. And he can do dreams. And Pharaoh says, get me the guy. So they send notice to Joseph. And they're going to take him to go see Pharaoh. And I spent a long time trying to figure out what happens next. It says, and Joseph shaved and changed his clothes and went before Pharaoh. And I'm thinking, why is it such a big deal? Because when stuff's in the Bible, we need to kind of dig down. Why is this in here? And so why did Joseph shave? I know why he changed clothes. He was in prison, probably stinky, didn't get full access to showers all the time. But why did he shave? And the more I dug, I found that while it was not uncommon, matter of fact, it was a practice among the Jewish people for them to grow their hair and their beards out and to not shave them. The Egyptians actually, especially those who were holy men or priests, would shave not just their face, but shave their head and shave the rest of their body. And so think about this. Joseph's been in prison for 13 years, or approximately 13 years. And in this time, he no doubt has learned to deal with what it's like to be a person who's an Egyptian. And the conjecture, my guess why he shaved here is he goes into prison as an enslaved Israelite. He comes out and he looks like an Egyptian holy man, which gives him an infinite more credibility with the Pharaoh. So as he goes before the Pharaoh, we could think, you know, he was just a slave. Now he's just the guy who the chief cupbearer had met. But we see God has been preparing Joseph to step into this situation. Pharaoh says to Joseph, so you're the guy who can interpret dreams. And he's like, no. I can imagine the cupbearer's like, no, dude, you did. Come on, tell him. And it's like, no, it's not me that does it. It's God. So give it, let me know what it is, and I'll tell you if I get anything. And Pharaoh says, okay, there was these seven fat cows. They were in the Nile River. They came out. They're looking happy and joyful. And then there's these seven look like bare skin and bones cows that come out of the Nile. And they attack the seven fat cows and eat them up. And they didn't get big. They didn't show like they'd eaten anything. It was crazy. So I woke up from that dream and said, you know, no more pizza for me before bed. And then he goes back to sleep and he sees corn growing. And he says, the best looking corn for the corn on the cob that you could ever want. And says, then there's these seven nobody would ever even approach, looks like death, ears of corn. And they grow up and they attack the good ears of corn and swallow them up. And Pharaoh's like, I don't know what this means. It messes with me. Can you tell me what it is? And Joseph says, God can tell me. Both these dreams are the same dream. And you only had it twice to emphasize that this is something God is going to do. Right now, we're at the start of 7 good years. We're going to be able to grow more crops, more food than we would ever have thought possible. But at the end of those 7 years, there's going to be a famine. And the famine is going to be so severe, it's going to wipe out any knowledge of the good years that had come before. So if I was you, here's what I would do. I would hire a guy who's really smart, good with administration, who will store up as much food as possible over these next 7 years, so that at the end of the 7 years when the famine comes, then we'll have enough food, not just for us in Egypt, but for, you know, basically the whole world. And Pharaoh's all, I like this guy. Anybody else think it's a good idea that we take this guy who obviously has the spirit of the gods inside of him and make him number 2 as the governor? When Pharaoh said, does anybody have an objection to this? Nobody's going to object to what the Pharaoh says. So Joseph goes from slave to governor like that. And it says for the next 7 years, he prepared for this famine that was going to be coming. Now, funny story. There's a point where this famine, when it comes around, it hits Israel and his sons, Jacob. And they heard, we can get grain and buy food in Egypt. So they show up and they're ushered to the governor's place where he dispenses food. And Joseph's standing there looking like an Egyptian, walking like an Egyptian, talking like an Egyptian, is not recognized by his brothers at all. And they come and they bow down before him. And they say, oh, great one, may we buy food from you. And Joseph, an Egyptian, through a translator says, you guys are spies. You guys are a bunch of snakes. And they're like, no, really, we're just here for food. And he says, tell me about your family. Oh, we're 12 brothers. One of them's dead. The other one's home with our dad. And, you know, he's just an old man. And we're just, you know, guys from the land of Shechem. And we're just here for food. And so, you know, I'd really like to believe you, but I just think you're here to spy out the land. Now, think about this. Most powerful country in the world at the time. And a man of great position. And you've got 10 sons of Jacob, Israel, standing in front of him. They don't look that intimidating. But Joseph is having a little fun at their expense. And so he says, you know what? I'll believe you if I'm going to put one of you in jail now. And when you come back, I'll let him out if you bring the youngest one with you. And they're like, okay, I guess that's what we're going to do. So they paid for their grain and then they left. And they found out later that Joseph had put the money back inside their sacks of grain. They're thinking, this is a really messed up situation. Now, not only is he thinking that we're spies, maybe, you know, we're thieves too. And so they go back home and they say, we're not going back to Egypt. You know, sorry, Simeon, you're going to rot because, you know, that's just where it's going to be. So at some point, they're telling their dad what happened. Their dad's like, why did you tell him all this stuff? He says, well, he was asking questions, and he was very specific, and wanted to know about our whole family, and he called the spies, and we thought we were going to die. And so that's why we told him. And Israel's like, oh, he says, what can I do? So they go by, and eventually, he says, they ran out of food. It's several months later. He said, we have to get food. And Reuben stands up and says, Dad, we can't go back. If we go back without Benjamin, he's going to not give us any food, he's going to throw us in jail. And at some point, Jacob slash Israel makes a declaration. He says, finally, I've already suffered so much. If my son doesn't come back, you know, what else have I lost? I'm already living 1 foot in the grave. And so they pack up everything, and they go to Egypt. They show up, taken to Joseph's house. They think this is a really bad omen. Something bad's going to happen to him. And he starts talking to him, and he meets Benjamin, and he sees his brother for the first time in 13 years, the one who is his actual blood brother. And it says, Joseph was overcome with emotion and compassion for his brother. And he ran out of the room and he went and cried. I love that Joseph, I mean, over, we see in this particular, in this passages, Joseph cries several different times. This doesn't mean that he's weak. This means that through all the things that he's been through, he still has a heart that is soft. In all the things that he had suffered, his heart was still soft. And though he was messing with, you know, 10 of his brothers, there's still this thing of seeing his youngest there. And so he goes out and he invites him to dinner. And they're looking around and they're, you know, getting ready to eat their food. And the Egyptians can't eat with the Jews. So the Egyptians are all eating on one side. The Jews are on the other side. And one of the brothers is like, weird. We're arranged according to birth order. How did this guy do that? And you see Benjamin's plate? He got 5 times what anybody else got. this is weird. This is like uber weird, like beyond weird. How? And so they're just like, this guy's a scary guy. Let's get our stuff, go home. Simeon gets out of jail. He's like, thanks for coming, guys. What took you so long? They buy the grain. They brought back double the money because Jacob said, just in case, you know, he doesn't, don't you think you're thieves? Joseph pulls aside his cupbearer and says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to put all the money they brought back in their sacks of grain. I want you to take my silver cup, the special one that I use, and I want you to put it in the mouth of the sack of my brother, Benjamin, the youngest. Okay? And then in a couple minutes, I'm going to send you out after him. And so they do that, and the Egyptian royal guard shows up, and they say, okay, you guys have repaid kindness with evil. Which one of you guys took the silver cup of my master? And they're like, dude, we didn't do anything. And they start popping open their grain. Said, if anybody, let them be put to death. If any of us took that cup. And they open it up, and Benjamin has a sack, and there's the silver cup. And it says they started screaming and tearing their clothes in grief. No, Ben, why did you do this? Dude, I didn't take it. I don't know how it got there. Like, you're the youngest. You were a little squirrely kid. Your dad's favorite now. How could you do this? You're just going to kill dad. Joseph's guard marches them back there. And Joseph says, okay, I'm going to keep the guilty one here. All the rest of you can go back. And it says the brothers had a great change of heart. And they began to offer themselves up in response, saying, take me instead. I can't do this to my dad again. I can't let him. And as Joseph saw that, it says that he said, everybody get out of here except for you 11. Everyone. And everybody bails. And it says he just begins to sob. And he says, is dad still alive? And they look at him like, who are you? This is, you're Egyptian. I said, no, it's dad. It's me. It's Joseph, your brother. You tried to kill me, remember? Sold me into slavery. Is my father okay? And it says he grabbed a hold of his brother and hugged him and kissed him and was holding on to him tight. And then all the other brothers are like, it's Joseph. And he seems to be happy. Let's roll with this, okay? And they're hugging on him and so excited. And it says there's this great wailing. Then outside the house, people hear something's going on in there. We don't know what it is. So Joseph goes and he tells Pharaoh, guess what? My brothers are here. And Pharaoh's all, awesome. And says, and my dad's still alive in the land of Shechem. He says, even better. Let's bring him here. And Pharaoh decides he's going to send off this great caravan to bring Israel and everything that they own to Egypt to be safe from this famine. Let's look at Genesis 45, 4 through 7. Joseph says this, come near to me, please. I'm your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. Story goes on. About 80 people move from the place in Shechem and are relocated to Egypt. When they get to Egypt, Pharaoh gives them the very best land for pasturing in the entire country, in the land of Goshen. And they have a place of great safety from this famine to grow and to multiply. We know later on that after about a couple hundred years, a Pharaoh comes up and sees there's so many Israelites now living in this land that he decides he's going to enslave them. And we'll be talking about that more next week. But when we're looking at Joseph's life, the reunion he has with his father and the restoration that ends up taking place is something that is absolutely incredible. There are those of us here who I believe we have had the hopes and dreams of our life deferred for years and years and years, to the point where we think, well, that's just the facts of my story. That's how things are going to be. That's how things are going to be for me. I believe that, you know, it took Joseph 13 years to experience the reunion with his dad and the restoration of his life. But he never gave up hoping and believing that there would be a point where there'd be freedom and there'd be hope and there'd be life. And I have to believe that in the middle of our own circumstances, God wants to remind us there is my truth about your life that has not come about yet. And for us to be contending that that is going to happen, keeping our hearts soft before him, that he will be able to accomplish in us the things that he wants to accomplish. Right on? One of the funny things that happens is when Joseph sends his brothers back to Israel to get his dad and to bring him back to Egypt, he says, okay, guys, you're going to have everything you need. Just bring dad and don't fight on the way, okay? I know you guys, don't fight on the way. And so it's just these funny things, but hindsight is often the best way for us to view our wanderings in life. Because when we're in the middle of the circumstance, it's not easy to always judge how great things are going. When Joseph had been thrown in the well, he's looking and thinking, this isn't going so good. When he's sold to the Ishmaelites, that's not going so good. When he's in Potiphar's house, still a slave, not going so good. When he's thrown into prison, still not going so good. But years later, to be able to look back and say, oh, God was fulfilling his promise to Abraham that he made in Genesis chapter 12 to be a blessing to all the nations. And he used my slavery and my wrongful accusations and the suffering I went through to be a blessing to the entire world. So when we are in the middle of our wanderings and when things are at maximum suckage, or we think that they are, we can say, God, I have to contend that you've got a purpose, that you're going to work for something for good for me in this. And you're going to fulfill your word, because he always will do that. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I pray that you would make us people of faith, people who look to you and not our circumstances, who in the middle of our own wanderings, that we would not be afraid, that we would not lose faith, but that we would contend for your blessing and for you working, because we love you and are called according to your purpose. You're working our circumstances for good. I pray that you would give us perseverance in the middle of right where we are right now, whatever circumstance we're in, that you'd give us perseverance to not grow weary of doing good, but to keep planting in the ground of our life your goodness and your righteousness and your obedience, that we would see that harvest of righteousness come about in our lives. We praise your name, Lord. I just want to give you an opportunity with nobody looking around. If you are in that spot where you're going through circumstances, you do not see the light at the end of the tunnel yet, and you need God to build perseverance into you and to increase points of faith and to give you joy in the middle of this, I just want to invite you to lift up both your hands to the Lord. It's time to say, Lord, this story is for me today. This is what I need from you. I ask that you do a work inside my life, and I choose to believe your truth, not just the facts that I'm experiencing. In Jesus' name, you can put your hands down. Amen.
This has been a podcast presentation of Hillside Foursquare Church in Reno, Nevada. You can reach us at web@hillside4.org.